It may be hard for many to believe, but there was a time, not too long ago, when it was difficult to find information about computers. Now you can't get away from it. But back in the day, hundreds of user groups sprung up in cities where people could come together and talk about their personal computers and share tips and tricks. I was a member of the Boston Computer Society and then discovered my local group, the Greater Cleveland PC Users Group. As you will hear, today's guest, Steve Bass, started the Pasadena group. Eventually, these groups formed an umbrella organization called APCUG, or the Association of Personal Computer User Groups. It's a group of groups. That's where I first met Steve Bass, who was one of the founding fathers of APCUG. You are probably more familiar with Steve because of his longtime column in PC World magazine and or his popular PC Annoyances books. In this podcast, Steve tells us how he got started, where he is today, and he offers a nice freebie deal. Coming to you from the world-renowned Magnum Building on beautiful Payne Avenue in the heart of Cleveland, Ohio, it's the entrepreneur himself, Dan Hansen, bringing you the Great Lakes Geek Show. Today we're speaking with Steve Bass, and when many people hear the name Steve Bass, they immediately think of Annoyances. And that's not so much because of Steve's personality, but because of his very popular books and book series and columns on PC Annoyances. But Steve, you didn't start out as a PC guy, did you?
No, actually not, but the thing about Annoyances is I did start out being annoying. My wife told me that, and she has for the last 37 years, so it's true. That's part of my personality. I started off, 100 years ago, as a licensed therapist. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. Had a clinic, and we started doing bunches of seminars. And one of the things that happened during the process, we had massive documentation, manuals that we had to give out at many of the seminars that we did. And I bought a computer in 1983 or 84. Almost bought a CPM machine at a Xerox store. And a guy from JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab, came over and sort of whispered in my ear when the salesman wasn't looking. He said, give it another couple of months because IBM is going to come out with something. And that was it. That's what I waited. And I bought, at the Sears store, I bought an IBM. And it was the kind of machine it had one floppy drive. It sat on my kitchen table for months and months gathering grease because I really didn't know how to use it. And I went back to the IBM store and said, you know, can you give me some support, some help? And they said, yeah, don't use it in the shower. And at that point, I took a 3x5 card and went to Software Central, a software store on Lake Avenue in Pasadena, stuck up a 3x5 card saying, I don't know what I'm doing with my new IBM, do you? Let's talk. And the first meeting I had was in my office, and we had about 7 or 8 people, everybody in the same boat. And over the years, we grew to an organization called Pasadena IBM Users Group, and we had 2,400 members, and we did that for about 24 years.
You know, back then, it's hard for people to believe nowadays with it's just ubiquitous, the computer coverage and technology coverage that's out there, but back then, there weren't a lot of sources for computer information, were there?
That's exactly right, and that's why user groups back in the day was so valuable, because we had... You think back of those days, for those of you who've been around, using a, you know, you faced a DOS screen, and you ran one program at a time. When bulletin boards first arrived, we would dial to one bulletin board and go to that one bulletin board and check for messages and then log off and disconnect and have to dial again to get another bulletin board. And they were all individual people with modems sitting on their desk, and it was such an antiquated way. And now, of course, get online, and if you can't get online, you feel just malnourished for the day. You know, if the garter cable goes down, God, what am I going to do? I can't check email, I can't go to the internet. But those days were different, with people struggling with memory for DOS and having to get QEMM.
Oh, yeah.
And desk queue.
Oh, yeah.
And software carousel, and all of those, actually, you know, from what I hear, there's a rumor that if you get an old copy of QEMM, it works really well with 64-bit machines.
Well, you can really multitask that way.
Absolutely, absolutely. You can get up to 16 gigabytes of RAM and get it all to work, not at the same time, because most of it's going to go to a RAM disk.
Those were interesting days and a lot of fun, actually, when you look back, but they were... those were truly annoying because you had so many issues to deal with, and relatively the machines were so slow and kludgy. But nowadays with all this, I'm not saying that it's easy, but about 10 years ago, I think, is when the Boston Computer Society closed down, said their mission was accomplished, and you closed down Pasadena. A lot of user groups just aren't, the people aren't coming there because they have other sources or for whatever reason. Do you think the user group philosophy, the idea of getting together in a room once a week or month is come and gone?
It's gone. Yeah. And the dilemma is that it's become more of a social club.
Yeah.
Less of a passing along information. And I think part of the problem is the economy over the last 2 years. It's much more difficult to get vendors to come out to a group, even a large group, because they have to deal with leaving their office, losing all of that time, having to spend a lot of time on the airplane, the cost of the plane and hotels. So all of those things contributed to the demise of lots of user groups. And at the same time, I just discovered one in Florida called, I think it's The Villages, and it's JMax Bits. This woman has, it's a retirement community, and she has 5,000 people coming to user group meetings.
Wow.
It's pretty astonishing. So I guess there's still some life. You have to be in the right retirement community. Sun City.
Yeah.
But back to what you said about the old days, sure, they were tougher in a way because you had to deal with DOS and command lines, and most people don't have the patience for that. Yet there was an excitement, just a thrill, being able to take all of the names in a user group, or in my case, with the counseling group and all of the people coming to the seminars, taking all of the, 10,000 names and putting them into a program and being able to look at all of those names and send out mailing lists and eBay's too. And boy, was that exciting. And now we take it for granted. You know, putting in names is no big deal.
Well, that's the thing. And I remember the first time I made a little change, like changing from 10% to 15% in a VisiCalc column, or maybe some people didn't Lotus 1-2-3 and saw it ripple through all the calculations. That was really impressive.
Yeah, and, well, now it doesn't even, you don't even see the ripple. It just happened.
Yeah,
you're right. I remember using SuperCalc and just being thrilled. Well, I was thrilled with WordStar.
Sure.
When I could get, when I did these manuals, and I could get line things up with right-hand justification and proportional spacing on an old daisy wheel.
Yeah.
My God, was that, that was just the thrill of a, well, not a lifetime, but a thrill for the day anyway.
And you didn't mind all this control K, you know, having to jump around the keyboard. You mastered them eventually.
I loved them.
Yeah.
I mean, control KB, KB, control K, KB, that's right. Those were exciting. Control U.
You know, the other, besides the annoyances thing, and we'll touch on those annoyances books a second, a lot of people are going to recognize your name from your longtime PC World column, and frankly, that's one of the reasons I stayed a subscriber to PC World for so many years, because of your column. It was the first thing I read and the thing I got the most value from. Tell us how that whole thing came about, and how long you had been doing that. And
it feels like a 100 years. It started in about 1989, while I was still doing the counseling group and the seminars. I always read PC World. I mean, that was the magazine. I liked it better than PC World, better than PC Magazine, because it was, I think, more thorough, had more content. In any event, in the inside back cover, they had a column called Another Angle, and they used guest columnists. And I said, on a lark, I've always written, I've always enjoyed writing, so I wrote a column. And lo and behold, they printed it, and they sent me $200, and okay, that was cool, great. And then about 6 months later, I got a call from someone, and they said, do you want to write a column on a regular basis? And I was floored. I couldn't believe it. And I said, of course I would. And I still stayed doing counseling for another 14 or 15 years, and wrote the column. The column developed, it started off as Taking It Home, then it became Home Office, and the column was my experiences as a common, you know, Joe Sixpack user, guy who comes home, works on his computer during the day, and then comes home and plays with the computer at night, and it was my experiences and the things that I learned. I remember the very first column was talking about how somebody broke into the house, while I was at work and started looking at the 286 that I had at the time, and left me a little note saying, "God, if you weren't such a cheapskate and you had a 386, I would have taken the coupe."
Yeah, I remember when I first saw your column, discovered all those many years ago, the first thing that came to mind was Jerry Purnell and Bite with his chaos manner, because you were more Joe Sixpack, I think, and easier to relate to. But did you model yourself on him at all, or do you,
yeah, I love Joe Jerry Purnell's stuff. He's the only guy who can always seem to be writing a column while his wife was driving the Jeep and sitting in the passenger seat typing away frantically, trying to get to his deadline before he got home. I did a little modeling from him, absolutely. And it was in mid-August of this year that PC World gave a pink slip to me and Steve Maness and Dan Tynan and about, I don't know, 15 or 20 other staff people, because the owner of IDG, who owns Macworld, IT World, Computer World, PC World, Macworld, I think I said that, and another bunch of, the poor guy has to have food on the table. So he laid off a whole bunch of people. And at times it was rather contentious between the PC World and me. And I started my own newsletter called TechBite, doing the exact same newsletters that I did for PC World, the same blog. But now I don't have to look over my shoulder and worry if I get laid off, because it's mine. The only one who can lay me off is me.
One of the things I liked about your old column and your newsletter, and now with the new TechBite column that you're doing, you have a bunch of stuff in it, and, you know, there's some really useful tips, but there's also frequently there's a time waster or a quick tip or something like that. Do you have a favorite recent time waster, for example, you could share with the listeners?
The missile guidance wave. There, this is not really a great tip, but I have waves. I use Eudora.
Yeah.
And I've got waves for specific people. So I know, as I'm sitting here and I see a bunch of email coming in, I know if there are any important emails.
Oh, that's cool. When you do when you did your column, or when you do your weekly or your newsletter, mm-hmm. How much do you rely on input from other users, or is this purely stuff that you run into in your day-to-day?
Oh, absolutely not. It's about 60-40, 70-30. 70% of the stuff comes from reader problems. The typical thing that you sit there and you stare at the computer and you try to figure out why. I'm trying to think of a good example. I with TechBite, there were a bunch of images, and there were a number of AOL people who said, you know, all I see is a little square with a red X in the corner. What do I do? And that's typical of how I do a hassle and a fix, or an annoyance and a fix. And yet there are other things that I do, really dumb things that I look at that I know other people are going to do, and that turns into a tip. I'll give you a great example. This is not common, but for a consultant, this is absolutely perfect, because they'll eventually run into it. My wife has a computer in the other room, and we use one printer, and it's networked. And somewhere along the line, I foolishly changed something about the printer. I changed it, I guess the name was something, and I didn't tell her, and she was trying to print, and it would go nowhere. It would get stuck somewhere. We finally resolved that part, and she said it's not printing, but that was after she tried about 15 to 20 times. Okay, so what happened is, somewhere in my system, that printer was still, I don't know how to explain this, it was still in my system somehow, and all of those print jobs were stuck in a queue.
Oh, yeah.
So what happened is, every time I booted up in the morning, Spool Services went out and said, "Oh, geez, there are 20 jobs. Let me see if I can print them." But the printer, that specific printer, no longer existed. So there was a delay when I booted up for about 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
And I found a workaround. The workaround was that I went to Task Manager and I killed Spool Server, and it would get rid of all of those until the next time I booted. To me, that's a clear annoyance that not average users would have, but any network consultant. But eventually, I think eventually bump into.
You know, that's one of the things with what you write. You have an unlimited supply now, and you're going to have an unlimited supply in the future. Even though the PC is, you know, approaching 30 years old or whatever it is, it's still working with a personal computer is really annoying, and it's not getting a whole lot. Well, it's a lot easier than in some ways, but there's still a lot of annoyances out there.
Bunches of annoyances, and that's why I wrote that book, PC Annoyances. Actually, I ought to tell you that story because I was always amused by it. When I was working at PC World, I was the king of kvetchers. I was always complaining about some software, feeling like the marketing guy pitched the engineer who couldn't really do that in the software, and yet they promised it to users, and the users couldn't find how to do it. And it was just, I was always annoyed. So PC World said, why don't you do an article called PC Annoyances? So I did one really big article, and I got a call about a month after it printed, after it published, and it was Tim O'Reilly from O'Reilly Press on the phone. And he said, you know, my marketing guy was sitting on a plane, and he read PC Annoyances. He called me as soon as I got off the plane. He said, we've got to get this guy and write a book. And I immediately said to Tim O'Reilly, Rod, stop pulling my leg. I don't have time for this. And I hung up.
Oh, man.
Yeah, sure.
No kidding.
Gotta be a joke.
Yeah.
Tim O'Reilly's gonna call me. And Tim O'Reilly called back in a second, and he said, no, it really is me. Write the book for us. And I wrote the first edition, and then it came out in the second edition. Pretty popular. And I think there's one available. One should be written for Vista.
Yeah.
Because Vista, I forget the name. I'm blocking on the Universal, the thing that keeps coming up.
Oh, the UAC?
UAC.
Yeah.
What a pain. Want to do anything comes up and it says, yeah, you sure you want to do this? I want to protect you.
Yeah.
Self.
Very annoying.
And Windows 7, by the way, has reworked that.
Really?
So it's not nearly as annoying, and you can turn it off. You can turn it off in Vista, but it's a lot more work.
Right.
Actually, Windows 7 looks like a cool product. I gotta look at it. It may turn people over from XP to Windows 7. It's a superset of Vista, and it really looks good. I'll be writing a Tech Byte column on it probably in about 3 weeks.
All right, so listeners, you can get kind of a flavor of what Steve writes about here, some of those annoying things we all deal with, and he's also got his finger on the pulse here, looking at some of the products we haven't had a chance to look at yet, like Windows 7. So, Steve, we're going to have links to how they can sign up for Tech Byte on the site here, but for those who are just listening, tell us how to get to learn more about Tech Byte and to sign up for your newsletter, and tell us what it costs and all that stuff.
Easiest pie. Just go to Tech Byte. It's one word, TechByte. It's the tagline is taking a bite out of technology, which we haven't figured out exactly what it really means, but it sounded right. Taking a bite out of technology. So we're taking a bite out of technology with a newsletter. Newsletter is about 1,000 words, comes out once a week. Unless there's something really, really critical happening, I'll send out another newsletter. The newsletter is not only free, but we pay people $10 to subscribe.
I hope no one stops listening now and goes to their computer.
That's right. Yeah, we'll send out a check, FedEx overnight, first delivery. It's a free newsletter. So far, we decided not to do advertising. We have a different business model, and I'll give you a taste of it. My partner, the guy who's doing the back end and all of the development, is a guy named Mike Cronenberg, and he wrote Explorer Plus, and he's written tons and tons of other products. He was the chief technology officer for PC Tools until they were bought by Symantec. Now he works for Webroot. And he said to me, when he heard that I was laid off, he said, boy, I've been wanting to do a website where I have the ability to take products that I know and love and put them up for free. So the business model is the newsletter is free. We're going to charge a yearly fee for people to get to a special spot on the website where they get extra things. One thing is they get access to me, where I'll write back to them, you know, answer their questions.
Yeah.
And we're going to have tons and tons of free software that was written by Mike, and software that's custom written for subscribers. So if a subscriber has a specific problem, I'll give you a great example. A guy named Brett Bartholomew once wrote this for me. I said, I'll set up Internet Explorer with all of the tabs and toolbars and everything just the way I want it. And then one day I'll boot up and pull up IE, and all of my toolbars are everywhere.
Right.
And he wrote a program called, I think it was IE Fix, where he took a snapshot of the way IE looked. And then if it went kaflooey, you would just call up his program and it would restore everything.
Wow.
And that's the kind of thing that Mike said, sure, I can write that. I gave him another example. Every so often, can't figure out why, IE will come up and say, I am now your new browser, even though I use Axon.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. I don't know how it happened. I don't know who did it. Mike is writing a little program that will set my browser to what I want it to and keep it there. So if a subscriber has a specific problem, and if Mike can write the program, we'll write it, and it'll be available to subscribers. So that's how we're going to have a business model.
That's cool. And nowadays, you can, as you read it online, you're just a click away from downloading that program or more information. Whereas with the print, obviously, you have to, after you're done reading, you have to go type things in and all. Do you think that, you know, I see so many publications have either gone away or are really thin now. Do you think that the print trade publications have much of a lifespan left?
That's tough. I predicted that PC World, I predicted 2 years ago that the print edition would be gone, and it's still here. And there are still a number of people who really enjoy taking a magazine, a physical magazine, and bringing it into special rooms in the house and read it there. My attitude is that anything in print, especially computer magazines, are 2 to 3 months old. And
right.
Everything that's in a magazine is also available online, usually sooner and with more content, because the print magazine is limited in size because they don't have advertisers. They're getting thinner and thinner. There are no limitations like that on the website. For example, I did a long piece on registry cleaners, and I did it specifically for online, and it was very, very long, very detailed, but it also appeared in print, and the print was one page.
Yeah.
The online was about 7 screens. So to me, online is the way to go. And I wrote a piece, which I'll reprint in TechBite. I did something in PC World right at the last month, about 2 or 3 programs that you can use that you can take online content and turn it into your own magazine and print it on your own. So you can read it at your own pace, fill in that special room, without having to subscribe to a $12 to $24 a year magazine. And frankly, if you're going to subscribe to a magazine, Maximum PC is terrific.
All right, listeners, for those of you who are at your computer now, be sure to follow the links to check out TechBite. I can vouch for Steve. I've read his stuff for years. It's fantastic. I always learn something. I think I know it all, and then I'll find something that really saves me a lot of time or effort, or it's just plain fun or interesting. For those of you who might be listening to this in that special room, remember, it's TechBite, T-E-C-H-B-I-T-E. And today we've been speaking with TechBite columnist Steve Bass. Thanks for joining us today, Steve.
A pleasure, Dan. Take care.
You've been listening to the Great Lakes Geek Show. Come back soon at www.greatlakesgeek.com.